Good afternoon, everyone.
Yes.
All right. Praise the Lord for his blessings. Let's look to the Lord in prayer as we begin. Most gracious and loving Heavenly Father, we thank thee that we can meet with thee this afternoon. What a privilege it is, Lord, to study your word together. And we pray that as we continue our study in the book of Genesis, that you would help us, guide and direct us now, Father, and bless us. We pray in Jesus' name. Amen. Well, the last couple of chapters, we've been able to go through there a little bit quicker because a lot of it is very straightforward narrative type of things. So it can usually go fairly fast. And probably today also, I don't think we'll finish chapter 41 because it is a rather long chapter. But we should certainly be able to get a good head start on that chapter. And I don't think we'll finish it next week because I will not be here next week. So, we'll have to finish it in 2 weeks' time. But we start out in chapter 41, which talks us now about Pharaoh's dreams. And it's interesting if you look at it because, Joseph himself, when he had dreams, it was two of them. You remember that? One dream about the stars and the other dream about the sheaves. But there were two dreams. And then when he was in prison, it was two dreams. A dream by the baker and a dream by the butler. So that was two dreams. And now again, it is two dreams. Because Pharaoh has two dreams. And this happens now, it says, 2 years after. And it came to pass at the end of 2 full years. So that means 2 years after Joseph had interpreted the dreams of the butler and the baker, now Pharaoh has a dream. So, you consider, Joseph must have been wondering, oh good, the butler is going to be released, and he's going to tell Pharaoh about me. 1 week went by, 2 weeks went by, a month went by, 2 months went by. 2 years have now gone by, and nothing yet. But now things begin to happen, 2 years later, because Pharaoh now has a dream. And in his dream, he stood by the river. And the Hebrew word used here indicates that this is a reference to the Nile River. I think we all know that the main river in Egypt is the Nile. Unless there be any question, the words used makes it very clear there. And as he sees the dream, as he has the dream, he sees in his dream, verse 2, and behold, there came up out of the river 7 well-favored kine. We would say cows today. So well-favored cows and fat flesh, and they fed in a meadow. So he sees, in other words, 7 good-looking fat cows coming up. And in the next verse then, he saw 7 thin cows come up out of the river. And behold, 7 other kine or cows came up after them out of the river, ill-favored and lean-fleshed. In other words, they were skinny, and they stood by the other kine upon the brink of the river. And the ill-favored and lean-fleshed kine did eat up the 7 well-favored and fed kine. So Pharaoh awoke. So he saw something very strange. The thin cows ate up the fat cows. And at that point then, Pharaoh wakes up. Now, later on, we're giving more details about this dream. But at this point, this is all that we are told. All right, so he has a dream. He has a nice sleep. He has a nice dream. He's standing by the River Nile. And something very unusual. Here come 7 cows out of the river. Wow. Here come 7 more cows. Wow. 1 set of 7, good looking. The other 7, very skinny, scrawny. And the skinny, scrawny ones ate up. I wonder how they did that. But the Bible doesn't tell us. But it just tells us they did. Well, Pharaoh woke up, but he managed to go back to sleep. And he slept and dreamed this second time. So he had a second dream, and at this point he says, "Behold, 7 ears of corn came up upon one stalk, rank and good." Now the word corn is not corn as we think of it today, which would be more maize than a sweet corn, but this is actually grain. And that's unfortunate because the King James does use the word corn, but it's not corn as we know it today. So 7 heads of grain come up, and it's upon one stalk, and they were rank, they were healthy, they were fat, they were good. And as I say, it's corn. The Dutch word, by the way, is koren, K-O-R-E-N, very similar, but that is grain. So that's not mice, as we call it. Now, as the dream continued, there she's 7 more coming up. Verse 6, "And behold, 7 thin ears and blasted with the east wind sprung up after them." So just as earlier he had seen 7 fat cows, 7 skinny ones, now he sees 7 fat ears of grain and 7 skinny ones. And we're told they were blasted with the east wind. And this east wind was well known. It was hot, it was dry, and that appeared from time to time. And it would cause a dryness over the land. And this wind is actually mentioned several other times in the Bible, in Ezekiel chapter 17 and verse 10. Ezekiel 16:17, verse 10. "Yea, behold, being planted shall it prosper, shall it not utterly wither. When the east wind touches it, it shall wither in the furrows where it grew." So it planted, but it shall wither because of the east wind. It's a hot east wind, so it's not able to grow. And then also in Hosea, which the young people recently looked at, Hosea chapter 13 and verse 5. "And I did know in the wilderness, in the land of great drought." So the great drought came because of the east wind. Actually, it's 13:15, not 5:15. "Though he be fruitful among his brethren, an east wind shall come. The wind of the Lord shall come up from the wilderness, and his spring shall become dry, and his fountain shall be dried up. He shall spoil the treasure of all pleasant vessels." So again, that east wind is mentioned. So this is not the only time that the east wind is mentioned here in Genesis 41. We'll see it mentioned at other places as well. So this time he sees them, the 7 good ears of corn, grain, and 7 bad ears of grain, and the thin ears were blasted with the east winds, the hot east winds, and they dried out. And then again he sees something very, very strange, as if the dream wasn't strange enough. The dream itself was already strange. You're seeing cows coming up out of water, you see the grain coming out of the river. But then he sees the 7 thin ears devouring the 7 rank and full ears. Somehow the thin ears swallowed the fat ones. And again, how did they manage to do that? We're not told. But they swallowed that. So, and again, Pharaoh awoke. So, 2 dreams that he has, one after the other, both strange dreams about thin cows eating fat cows, and then thin ears of grain somehow devouring fat ears of grain. And again he woke up, and it's interesting because But it says for the second time, verse 7, and Pharaoh awoke, and behold, it was a dream. So that, you know, the way it's worded there, it almost implies that he thought it was real what was happening. So in his dream, it was so real that when he woke up, you mean it was only a dream? So he thought it was actually happening. So, but he found out, it seems, even though it had seemed so real to him, he found out that it was just a dream. Well, it came to pass in the morning that his spirit was troubled. So he woke up, if he managed to get any more sleep, which we're not told. You know, after his first dream, he did manage to fall asleep, and he had a second dream. But whether after the second dream he lay there awake wondering what those two dreams could mean, we don't know, we're not told. But anyway, it came to pass in the morning, whether he had any more sleep or not, we don't know. But his spirit was troubled. All right? And I think that you and I would no doubt have been troubled also if we would have had such a strange dream. You know, I would imagine that after the second dream especially, probably wouldn't sleep much. You know, thinking about what in the world is this all about? So, you know, and of course, this was what God wanted him to consider, because he knew that the dreams came from God. So, the effect God wanted to have on Pharaoh, an obvious effect there. And Pharaoh wanted to know the meaning of the dreams, so he called for all the magicians of Egypt. So, we're told that in verse 8, came to pass in the morning that the spirit was troubled, and he sent and called for all the magicians of Egypt. Now, the magicians here, word that, according to Fruchtenbaum, refers to sacred scribes. And this word is only used once in Genesis, this particular case, but it's used seven times in Exodus 7, 8, and 9 about the Egyptian magicians that opposed Moses. And you remember, you know, when Moses threw down the rod and it became a snake, that the Egyptian magicians, they threw down their rod and they also became snakes. So you do see that these magicians had some demonic powers there. So you see them in that particular case there. So it is used of the Egyptian magicians who opposed Moses, and the word is also used in Daniel. If you look at the book of Daniel, chapter 1, and verse 20, Daniel chapter 1, verse 20, and in all the matters of wisdom and understanding that the king inquired of them, he found them, that is Daniel and his three friends, 10 times better than all the magicians and astrologers that were in his realm. And then also in chapter 2 and verse 2, then the king commanded to call the magicians and the astrologers and the sorcerers and the Chaldeans for to show the king his dreams. So they came and stood before the king, because Nebuchadnezzar had a dream. And interestingly, case of Nebuchadnezzar also, his spirit was troubled to know the dream. Well, in this particular case, he had forgotten his dream, and he told the magicians not only to interpret the dream, but even to tell him what the dream was all about. So what did you dream? And they said, well, we can interpret it if you tell us the dream. Well, I've forgotten the dream. You tell me. You're the magician. And of course, they are unable to do so, and that's when Daniel ultimately then comes into the picture. But here, of course, we see, you know, Joseph. So, but the idea there is the magicians. So they're mentioned. So these were at the court there, and not only the magicians, also he called all his wise men, we're told. So his spirit was troubled, he sent and called for all the magicians of Egypt and all the wise men thereof. So the wise men also got called. And the wise men, that's the word that means that these were expositors of ritual books. They were experts of priestly craft and magic, according to Fruchtenbaum. And Pharaoh told them his dream, but no one could interpret it. So we see there that, you know, they tried, but they just have no idea what these two dreams are all about. And it's at that point then that the butler says, hey, 2 years ago I was in prison and I had a dream. And there was that chap in prison, that Hebrew fellow, he interpreted my dreams. So the butler now remembers Joseph, and in verse 9, there's really an admission of fault on the part of the chief butler. Now then spake the chief butler unto Pharaoh, saying, I do remember my fault this day. So he remembered what had happened. And it's kind of like a half-hearted apology for not bringing this up earlier. But he says, now, all of a sudden, I remember. And he went on to recount what had happened 2 years before. Pharaoh was wroth. He was angry with his servants. And he put me in ward. He put me in prison, in the captain of the guard's house, that is in Potiphar's house. Both me and the chief baker, remember, there was two of us, you locked us up at that particular time, and both of us dreamed a dream in one night, I and he. We dreamed, each man, according to the interpretation of his dream. So both of us had a dream, and, you know, we couldn't figure out what that dream meant either. And there was there with us a young man, a Hebrew servant to the captain of the guard, and we told him, and he interpreted to us our dreams. So each man according to his dream he did interpret. So he's simply recounting what we have already looked at before last week about the dreams that they had. And it came to pass, as he interpreted to us, so it was. In other words, the interpretation that this young fellow there, this Hebrew gave, came to pass. In other words, it happened according to his interpretation. Me he restored unto my office, and him, the baker, he hanged. So, you know, so, by the way, he hanged. Potiphar did the hanging, all right, because he was chief of the executioners. So there's that repeating there, when all of a sudden the butler, chief butler, remembers what has happened before. So that brings then that Joseph now comes before Pharaoh and interprets his dreams. Verses 14 through 32. So Pharaoh then called Joseph to appear before him. Then Pharaoh sent and called Joseph, and they brought him hastily out of the dungeon. And he shaved himself and changed his raiment and came in unto Pharaoh. Well, you know, before Joseph could appear before Pharaoh, he needed a bath, a shave, and some new clothes. All right, to put it very simply. You know, he'd been in prison a number of years now, and so the prison clothes that he was wearing certainly would not be appropriate to wear in the presence of Pharaoh, so he would need some new clothes, and no doubt he would need a bath at that particular time as well. It doesn't mention that. And then he had to shave, and the reason is that the Egyptians did not approve of beards. All right, so the Egyptian paintings that exist from back in those days, when you have the pharaohs, they do have some of the paintings there, and the Semites, and of course the Jews were Semites, whenever they picture them, they always appear them with beards. But the Egyptians always appear clean-shaven. Alright, so very interesting there. So, you know, the Egyptians were clean shaven, the men with a beard really couldn't appear before Pharaoh. So Joseph, well, get rid of that beard, boy, before you can see Pharaoh. So he is shaven. Alright, so in verse 15 then, Joseph is now before Pharaoh, and Pharaoh said unto Joseph, I have dreamed a dream, and there is none that can interpret it. And I have heard say of thee that thou canst understand a dream to interpret it. Well, it makes it very clear. I've had a dream, and nobody of my wise man magicians, they can interpret it. And I have heard, from the butler, of course, that you can understand dreams, that you can interpret them. But then Joseph immediately answers and says, no, I cannot. It is not in me. God shall give Pharaoh an answer of peace. So it was not in Joseph. He did not have himself that ability to interpret dreams, but rather it was God who gave him the interpretation of dreams. And in this case he says, God shall give Pharaoh an answer of peace. Now, when he says an answer of peace, he does not necessarily mean that the interpretation itself would be good news, you know, but rather that Pharaoh will have satisfaction in knowing the meaning of his dreams. Because we know that the interpretation, you know, part of it is good, part of it is bad. So, you know, there's kind of a mixed report there in the interpretation as Joseph interprets the dream, which begins in verse 25. So here then, he says, all right, God will give Pharaoh an answer of peace, so that you will know this is the meaning of the dreams. And then in verses 17 through 24, Pharaoh reveals his dreams to Joseph. But now we are given some additional information that we were not given before. Alright? Well, let's read the dreams. And Pharaoh said to Joseph, verse 17, in my dream, behold, I stood at the bank of the river, Nile, and behold, there came up out of the river seven kine cows, fat flesh, well favored. They sat in a meadow, which would have been near the meadow, near the Nile River. And behold, seven other kine or cows came up after them, poor and very ill-favored and lean-fleshed, skinny, such as I never saw in all the land of Egypt for badness. Now, that last part there, you know, when he says, such as I never saw in all the land of Egypt for badness, that is a new statement. That was not given to us earlier when we first read about the dreams. So, but Pharaoh says, I've never seen any cow that looked that bad. You know, now he tells Joseph that. And then he goes on, and behold, seven other kind came up, verse 20, and the lean and the ill-favored kind did eat up the first seven fat kine, and now again we get some new information we were not told before. And when they had eaten them up, it could not be known that they had eaten them. They were still ill favored as at the beginning. So I awoke. So it's not only that he says the seven skinny ones ate the seven fat ones, but after they'd eaten, they were just as skinny as they were before. You know, you think if you eat, you know, don't we sometimes have a big dinner? And we men, we got to loosen our belts because it becomes a little bit tight. You know, our tummy is really full. Well, in this particular case, you know, if seven skinny ones ate seven fat ones, that means each one must have eaten one fat one. You know, that's a lot of eating to eat a whole cow. Well, what a dream. But, you know, just as skinny as they were before. All right. Well, that's the first dream. So we got the second dream then. All right. So we go on there. And where are we? All right. So, verse 24, where are we now? All right. Then he goes on. In his second dream, seven ears came up and one stalk full and good. And behold, seven ears withered thin and blasted with the east wind, sprung up after them. And the thin ears devoured the seven good ears. This time he didn't say that they were just as skinny as before, but I'm sure they were. I told this unto the magicians, but there was none that could declare it unto me. So, all right, there were very thin cows, ate up the seven fat cows, they were still as thin as before. He goes on to the second dream and concludes by saying there was none that could declare it unto me. So there is no one that was able to interpret these two dreams. Now Joseph goes then on, beginning at verse 25, to give the interpretation. So the dream of Pharaoh, he says, is one, indicating that both dreams mean the same thing. And also, there will not be two sets of interpretation, but there will just be one set of interpretation. All right? And also, Joseph indicated that it was a divine revelation of the future to the king there. Because the dream of Pharaoh is one, all right? The two dreams mean the same thing. God has showed Pharaoh what he is about to do. So God is showing Pharaoh through these two dreams what the future is going to be like. And as we know, that's ultimately the future for the next 14 years. 7 years, 7 years. Seven cows, 7 years. You know, both of them representing 7 years. So he goes on then in verse 26. The seven good cows are 7 years, and the seven good ears are 7 years. The dream is one. And the seven thin and ill-favored kine or cows that came up after them are 7 years. And the seven empty ears blasted with the east wind shall be 7 years of famine. So now we get the bad news. There will be 7 years of famine. So first, good cows, good ears, refer to 7 years. These are seven good years. And then seven bad cows, seven thin ears, 7 years of famine will be in the land. So verse 28, this is the thing which I have spoken unto Pharaoh. What God is about to do, he showeth unto Pharaoh. So Joseph declares that these dreams are God's revelation to Pharaoh. He is showing Pharaoh what he is going to do. First, there will be 7 years of great plenty, and then there will be 7 years of great famine. All right, verse 29. Behold, there come 7 years of great plenty throughout all the land of Egypt. That's the good news. 7 years of plenty. But then, verses 30 and 31. And there shall arise after them 7 years of famine, and all the plenty shall be forgotten in the land of Egypt, and the famine shall consume the land. And the plenty shall not be known in the land by reason of the famine following, for it shall be very grievous. So 7 years of great famine after 7 years of plenty. And verse 32, and for that the dream was doubled unto Pharaoh twice, it is because the thing is established by God, and God will shortly bring it to pass. All right. Now, you know that the dream was by the Nile River. All right. Now, the Nile was a lifeline of Egypt. Egypt has very little rain. Sounds like WA, huh? Very little rain. So it was a real problem. And Egypt actually was dependent upon the flooding of the Nile River to moisten the land and for the planting. So this was an annual thing. And you see that still happening today, not only in Egypt. There's other countries as well. You know, you see in the spring, after the winter, there is more water. Of course, Egypt wouldn't have a lot of snow and ice, but the River Nile does come down from further down and from the high mountains where there is some snow. And in the spring, the amount of water would increase. And I'm not sure if you've been at Niagara Falls during the winter, but there's a lot of ice that is there. And sometimes what happens is that the Niagara River runs from Lake Erie to Lake Ontario. That can actually block up because there'll be so much ice that it just blocks up and it just accumulates and all of a sudden it goes through. But also say that the Mississippi, as that runs south into the Gulf of Mexico, you know, you see that also in the spring, more water coming down because of the snow melting, and it overruns the banks. So this has always been a thing. But this is what, in Egypt, they counted on for the land to get moist, so that it gets soft, so that they were able to plant the crops. So the Nile will flow in abundance for the first 7 years, but then it would also reduce heat into inadequacy for the second 7 years. So that would be the nature then of the famine in the land of Egypt. Not so much the withholding of rain, but rather the failure of the Nile to flood. So that, again, it's very much about the Nile River that a lot of the problems there developed. So God then gave Pharaoh two dreams. They meant basically the same thing in order to drive the point home. If you look at verse 32, "And for that the dream was doubled unto Pharaoh twice, it because the thing is established by God, and God will shortly bring it to pass." So the thing is established by God. It's like two. If you're not sure after one, there's the second one. Reverend Dr. Timothy Toe used to say, two is a confirmation. And I've heard him say that so many times. You know, here you have once, here you have twice, two is a confirmation. This is what is going to happen. And this we know did happen. So, there's the dream. There's the interpretation. There's going to be seven good years. There's going to be seven bad years. Good years, the Nile will flood abundantly. Seven bad years, there's not going to be much water from the Nile, so you're not going to be able to have much crops. But Pharaoh now has another problem to deal with. Joseph points out, verse 33, all right? We come now to the section, Joseph is made overseer of Egypt to prepare the country for 7 years of famine, verses 33 to 44. All right, 33. "Now therefore, let Pharaoh look out a man discreet and wise and set him over the land of Egypt." So Joseph advised Pharaoh, appoint somebody who can now take charge of things. Fruchtenbaum calls it an economic leader. Interesting term. The political leader would be Pharaoh, but now you have an economic leader that can look after these things. So a man who is discreet, a man who is wise, appoint him, and then, verse 34, "Let Pharaoh do this. Let him appoint officers over the land and take up the fifth part of the land of Egypt in the seven plenteous years." So you see there that not only does Joseph recommend, why don't you get one person, you know, a well-qualified person, He says, you know, that is discreet, a man that is wise, put him in charge, and then under him have officers, and you can have them also taking up, he says, the fifth part of the land of Egypt in the seven plenteous years. Now, in other words, these overseers that are appointed under the economic leader, they should collect taxes. And the taxes, he indicates, is 20%. All right, because that's what it says. The fifth part of the land of Egypt. Now, the fifth part is 20%. So that is the taxes that will be collected so that he can store up all this food, and that is what the people will be able to eat during the 7 years of famine. So here's that. So this is Joseph's recommendation. As you go on, let Pharaoh do this, appoint the officers, they will collect 20%, and let them gather all the food of those good years that come, and lay up corn or grain under the hand of Pharaoh, and let them keep food in the cities. And that food shall be for store to the land against the 7 years of famine, which shall be in the land of Egypt, that the land perish not through the famine. So that's what he indicates there. You know, you collect taxes, 20% of the crops, put them aside, build storehouses, put it all in these storehouses, keep it safe. Then when you get the 7 years of famine, the people are going to need food. You have all that laid by you in store. So there's good advice there of Joseph. So Joseph not only gave the correct interpretation of the dreams, which of course was given to him by God, but he now also gives good advice. Well, Pharaoh and his servants, they all thought that the advice was excellent. You know, if you look at verse 37, and the thing was good in the eyes of Pharaoh and in the eyes of all his servants. That's an excellent idea. Yeah, I think we should do that. And then Pharaoh asks another question, you know, said unto his servants, can we find such a one as this is, a man in whom the Spirit of God is? So when Pharaoh hears the interpretation of the dream and then gets the good advice from Joseph, he says, yeah, that's a good idea. All the other people there say, excellent idea. Well, who can be kept to be charged of that except the best person would be the one that has just given us this advice. He would be the logical person to take charge of that. So, and you know, there's interesting things in there, because he says in verse 38, can we find such a one as this is, Joseph, a man in whom the Spirit of God is? Now, that phrase, in whom the Spirit of God is, probably should be the Spirit of the gods, with a small g, because Pharaoh is not a believer. Pharaoh is a pagan. So it is not very likely that he would be referring to the true God, so, but rather the gods. And I think I've mentioned before, the Hebrew word for God is Elohim, and the im indicates it's a plural ending, but it is used about the true God with a singular verb. So you have a plural subject with a singular verb, which if you write that in English class in school, your teacher will correct you for that. But, you know, we know that in the Bible, that is a reference to the true God. In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. You know, bara Elohim. Bara, he created, third person singular. But Elohim is plural. But it indicates this is the true God. But here, not likely to be the true God, but rather the false gods of the Egyptians. But the spirit of the gods is in him. So Pharaoh now appoints Joseph to the second highest position in the land. Verse 39. And Pharaoh said unto Joseph, For as much as God has showed to thee all this, there is none so discreet and wise as thou art. Since God has revealed all this to you, God has showed you all this. So, you know, verse 40, thou shalt be over my house, and according unto thy word shall all my people be ruled. Only in the throne will I be greater than thou. So he says, you are going to be the second person in the kingdom. So, and this is what we see. So, you know, you have other cases too. You know, think of the book of Esther, where the king, Ahasuerus, makes Mordecai second in the kingdom. And then in the case of Daniel is made third ruler in the kingdom. Why isn't he made the second ruler in the kingdom? There's a good reason for that, because the king actually was co-regent together with his father. So there was a father, there was a king. So the best they could do was make Daniel the third ruler in the kingdom. All right. So they used to think that was a mistake in the Bible, till they found out that Nabonidus, you know, the king, there were some problems there. He liked to do some stargazing. And, you know, he'd be sleeping in the daytime so he could look at the stars at night. So, as a result, there was a king, there was his son, co-regent, the one awake at night, the other one awake during the day, so Daniel became number three. But here, you see Joseph now becoming number two in the kingdom. And what Furstenbaum calls, he says, there's both a positive statement and a negative statement made here, although I wonder about the negative statement. But thou shalt be over my house, and according unto thy word shall all my people be ruled. So that is the positive statement, you'll be over my house. But negatively, only in the throne will I be greater than you. And, you know, you look at it, and you look at the life of Joseph. All right. He was sold into Egypt, Potiphar's house. Potiphar was number one, Joseph was number two. All right. He's put in prison. The keeper of the prison is number one, Joseph, number two. Now, he's elevated to what we might say the position of prime minister. Pharaoh's number one, Joseph is number two. So again, you see the same thing, where God elevates him. But in each case, Joseph becomes number two. All right, he was under Potiphar, he was under the keeper of the prison, now he's under Pharaoh, but of course, he is in a very good position there. So, Pharaoh did now the same thing and puts him in that special position, and we might almost say that he's like a, you know, prime minister, you know, so that he has a very high position. I think we should stop here, actually, because of the time. I can keep going, but, you know, it's better stop here. Next week, there will be no 2 o'clock adult Bible class, because I will not be here. His plans are for me not to be here. Lord willing, I'll fly to Singapore on Friday. Be there. Preacher Mark Chen will be picking me up from the airport. He's trying to arrange meetings for me on Saturday. Sunday we have church service. Monday we have the ordination examination for Mark Chen, and see how that goes. And then Tuesday morning I'll be having breakfast with Deacon Johnson. So that's already arranged, and probably Pastor Craig Sriva as well. So that's all arranged for Tuesday, and then Tuesday night I'll fly back, arriving here back on Wednesday morning. So I will not miss any prayer meetings, but I will next Sunday, the worship service. Pastor Glenn Locke will be preaching next Sunday, so you can see his sermon topic in the bulletin already. All right? And I need to talk to the worship leader about that also. Okay, I think that's all for today. Okay.